This is the Premier League Preview Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Premier_podcast. Find us on Facebook under Premier League Preview Podcast or online at plpreview.com.
Hello, you're very welcome to the Premier League Preview Podcast. I'm Sean Fitzmaurice, joined as always by Mr. O'Maloney.
Howdy.
Oh, we have to start off this week with a bit of an apology. We missed last week. Work commitments got in the way.
Life, it has to be lived.
As you all know, we do this podcast just for the pure love of the game and the pure love of our listeners. But sometimes the paying job gets in the way and we have to actually do real work. And that happened to us last week. And what a week to miss out the podcast. The week that the special one returned to the Premier League. Jose Mourinho.
Have to be listening to his shit now, week in, week out again. Like, it's bad enough when Sky Sports paid him as an analyst and you had to listen to it when he wasn't a manager, but now you're going to have to...
I don't know. When he was an analyst, he kind of endeared himself to me a little bit.
Oh, will you stop? You must...
His attitude changed. He became all like Mr. Nice Mourinho.
Oh, he's just going to be an arrogant asshole again now. And like, God forbid the thought that Spurs might go on a winning run and then you have to deal with his smugness. And then when it invariably starts to go bad, you have to deal with his pettiness. Like, I don't know, I thought, to be honest, that he might go away and get a job in Europe and just maybe...
You have to think based on his last couple of jobs and everything Poch has done at the club, it's been a massive step backwards for them.
It is, definitely.
There's no other way you can look at it. I know he's Jose Mourinho. He has the track record of winning countless titles with Chelsea, with Inter Milan, with Porto, league titles with Real Madrid. Mm. But...
League Cups with Man United, don't forget.
But after that, it teetered off. And he's kind of, I know people say he's yesterday's man and the game has passed him by, but he knows how to make a team play.
He does.
But is he better than Pochettino?
No, but I think looking at Spurs' squad, when I saw their line out on Saturday, I thought, do you know what? This team suits him. They have a relatively strong back four.
Very interesting.
They're
that
physical.
Very interesting that he left Eriksen on the bench, though.
It is, right? And if you looked at the team he set up, he had the back four, Sanchez, strong man, brought in. You had Winks and Dyer both sitting, as he likes to protect the back four. And then he has Kane as well. He has the target man up front. That is the way Jose Mourinho plays the game.
Archetypal Mourinho.
Yeah,
team.
So I think this team does suit him. So, but will he do as good of job as Poch? I don't think so. I think that's an incredibly bad decision that Spurs have made. I think it's rash. I think they've forgotten what that man has done for the club.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to rue that, to be honest, in a year. Maybe, now, look, we all know Jose Mourinho has gotten results for most of his career, because you can't say at every club or all the time now anymore. That doesn't apply to Jose Mourinho anymore, and I won't have any of it. But most of the time he gets results, and he's a fairly solid bet that he can do that.
Yeah.
But I think in the long run, they're going to regret leaving Mauricio Pochettino going. Now, who knows why it was done? Was there a dispute going on? Obviously, with Spurs' form, toward the end of Pochettino's reign, things weren't all rosy in the garden. There was something up there. We obviously know about the Eriksen thing. Everyone is talking about that now. But was that just it? You see, there's a lot of things that we obviously don't know as just our regular punters, but I think in the cold light of day, when it's analysed at maybe the end of the season, I think they'll regret that.
Yeah, I definitely think it was time to get rid of Pochettino. There was definitely, things had gone bad there.
Do you think it was time to get rid of him?
I think so. The run of games they were having and just everything about the club just screamed, needed a change.
Do you think it was him that needed to go though? Do you think that's what did
it? Well, it was obvious the club weren't going to give him the money he needed to buy new players. Mm. They weren't going to, the club had no interest in progressing. He'd got them so far and the club had no interest in going any further than that.
I can see it from that perspective, whereby he wanted to bring the squad to the next level and they wouldn't pay them, they wouldn't show him the money, so that's fair enough. Like,
there was a massive stalemate there, and it wasn't going to end in any other way than Pochettino leaving. But I don't know what Daniel Levy was thinking, bringing in Mourinho to replace him.
The only reason Mourinho, I don't care what anyone says, the only reason Mourinho, bar the obvious big payday, would be, the only reason he'd sign that contract is if he had the pre-agreement with Levy that he was going to get that money.
Oh well,
there's no way that he was going to say, I'll work on this for a few years. Mourinho has never done that.
Well, if what I thought was very interesting was Mourinho's first interview as Spurs boss was talking about young players and how he's always focused on young players. Mourinho's never focused on a young player
he's
in his life.
He's never allowed the academy players to flourish.
He's been renowned for letting teams age until the point that they're yeah. done, and then he goes. So it's obvious that Levy has said to him, we're not going to give you money to buy loads of players, but we have this academy of great players that we want you to develop. Because Mourinho changed his lifelong rhetoric and started saying, oh, I believe in you, I want the youth to come through, and then started talking about how he brought McTominay through at United. That's only because he had no other midfielders left. Yeah. But
where was Mason Greenwood or Brandon Williams, or, you know, there's plenty others that at United that look to be, that can make the breakthrough.
Yeah.
They didn't get a sniff under him.
Exactly. Well, you know, it remains to be seen how it turns out for him. I think they'll become a typical Mourinho workhouse side. They have those type of players. They don't have, I've said it before, Spurs don't have a massive amount of flair players. They have a lot of industrious players.
Yeah. Bar Son. And obviously Eriksen is a creator, but he may not get a look in now.
Yeah, Son, Eriksen, and probably Lucas Moura are the kind of creative types. Outside of that, they're all very hardworking, disciplined, good quality players. And that's a kind of a Mourinho squad. So he will do well with them, but can they progress past where Pochettino got them?
No.
No, I don't think
they reached their peak when they got to the Champions League final. And that, I think even the most bright-eyed of Spurs fans would have agreed, like, the only way was probably down after last year, unless they splashed in the summer, which they clearly didn't.
Yeah.
So then I think they weren't expecting the same results. But I think, again, in the cold light of day, after over a fairly large sample size, instead of just looking at it in a couple of game window, they're going to regret it. Yeah. I really do think they will.
Well, I definitely think, especially looking at the weekend that's just passed, the fixtures of the weekend just passed, I think that Spurs probably panic sacked them. Because if you look at what happened over the weekend and what's been happening, there's a list of managers that could very well have their P45 even before people have listened to this podcast this week.
Yeah.
You're looking at Pellegrini, you're looking at Marco Silva, Unai Emery, Ralf Hasenhüttl. Yeah. That's four right off the bat.
Yeah.
That they're looking like they could lose their job very sharpish. And Ole Gunnar Solskjaer,
obviously.
We're just
going to say, he probably bought himself time by snatching that draw later at Bramall Lane.
Apart from 7 minutes in that game, he was probably going to lose his job straight after. So there's going to be, I mean, I text you over the weekend and I said there's going to be absolute carnage in the manager market this week. And I know the clubs seem to have been reluctant to get rid of managers, but for a lot of those teams now, it's looking like something needs to change.
For sure. And obviously, we say this with the caveat, if you listen to this maybe on Thursday or Friday, there's a chance that Marco Silva could be gone, because the rumblings are on Monday as we record that they're looking for a replacement, and whether it be David Moyes again, which I think a lot of Everton fans would be like, well, he shouldn't have been gone in the first place, or Eddie Howe from Bournemouth, which I think is a I don't see that as a viable option right now, to be honest. I wouldn't see that happening, but
I think it'd be a good option for Everton if they got Eddie Howe, but I think it'd be a very much a sideways move for Eddie Howe.
I don't see him leaving that club. I really don't. He's the longest serving Premier League manager at that club, and
it's hard to see him going for a team like Everton.
Because they're playing so badly at the minute.
Not that there's anything wrong with Everton or their players, but just where they find themselves at the moment. And to walk away from what he's built at Bournemouth into what appears to be an absolute mess at the moment.
Yeah, I just don't see him. I think it's quite obvious, to be honest. He loves that club. He loves Bournemouth. And I just don't see him leaving for an Everton job right now. And that's not a disparaging comment toward Everton, because they are a relatively big club. It's just the situation that they're in now. Why would you throw yourself into that? You're starting from afresh again in a terrible situation, trying to basically build the club back up again as it's crumbling, when you have a brilliant vibe around Bournemouth at the minute. You're doing well. There's no chance of relegation again this year. There's no real not ambition, because obviously every professional club has ambition. There's no expectation of deliverance on them.
You stay in the Premier League every year, and it's as good as winning the Premier League for Bournemouth.
Eddie Howe won't leave that job to basically expose himself, maybe. Until he'll only believe in that for a guaranteed step up, which Everton isn't right now, and there's no point in saying otherwise. So I think the most likely outcome is that Moyes will be back again in Everton again, But that's probably dependent on how everything get on this weekend. But that's if they don't. As I said, we could record this on Monday, put it out Monday night, and he's gone Tuesday. You know,
we say this every weekend, and they've just been beaten by the bottom side in the league. So
exactly, and we must point this out every time we say, "Geez, Norwich are definitely gone, definitely gone. They go and win a game. Watford definitely gone, definitely gone. They go and win a game, and then they give themselves a bit of a prayer." But now that likely it is both Norwich and Watford are probably gone. But at the same time, you know, it just must be pointed out that we are the harbingers of the exact opposite of what we predict. So
I'd say Rafa Benitez has run out of printer ink with the amount of CVs he's sending out.
He'll get one soon. He'll get one soon for sure.
Arsene Wenger might be an option for one of those clubs as well. I know he was quite keen on getting the Bayern Munich job. So there's rumours that he contacted Bayern Munich and said, "Can I have the job?" And they said, "No, you're grand."
The issue is with Arsene, it's that legacy thing. Yeah. Arsene does have and deservedly so, he has a high opinion of himself. Arsene ain't going to Everton trying to build things back up in 15th position. He's not going to bother himself doing that. It's just not going to happen. Would he take maybe the United job? I could see him doing that if it was offered to him, but I think the whole of Manchester would be burned to the ground if Arsene Wenger was to take over. So probably not an option either. But anyway, moving on. There's a lot of change. There could be a lot of change come January. Like, we could see four or five different managers, and I can't believe actually that there's only been the changes that there have been so far this season. To be honest,
I think there's two managers changed. That Javi Gracia was replaced by Kike Sanchez Flores,
and Mourinho in for Poch.
Mourinho in for Poch.
You wouldn't have predicted that, to be fair. That would not have been the one you would have predicted.
I had predicted that Poch was gone for the past few weeks, but I didn't think that Mourinho was going to be the man to replace him.
I didn't think they'd pull the trigger as quickly on Poch as they did. I thought that he had massive credit in the bank after last year, but evidently not.
No, I think it might have been a case, as I was saying, that there's so many managers' jobs that are tenable at the moment that Spurs felt they needed to make a move and get a replacement in while there was a replacement available. I think that Pochettino could be looking very much at the Spurs job, or sorry, at the United job, but would he want to take that on after the record that the past three managers have had there? Also, it looks like PSG are quite keen on getting Poch in. He's seen as a club legend there, and they want to replace, I don't know why, for some crazy reason, they want to replace Thomas Tuchel, who has them flying at the top of the league. But I think it's
obviously the perceived European shortcomings. It has to be there. They keep falling at the. They look. We've seen them in some debacles in Europe in recent years, it's kind of like Man City. It's just that falling at the final hurdle a lot in Europe, and they obviously just want someone to take them to the next level. And we've seen Poch last year.
This isn't a European podcast or a French league podcast.
We're ranting randomly,
but as long as they are playing in a league that is so substandard on a weekly basis, they're never going to do well in the Champions League, no matter who's the manager. But I think they are looking at Pochettino. Anyway, what we're going to do, because this is a Premier League preview podcast and we haven't previewed one game yet and we're half an hour into the podcast. Actually, we're only 13 minutes.
That's grand.
But what we're going to do is we're going to take a little break, and when we get back, we're going to preview all the upcoming games from this week, and we'll talk about some of the stuff that's happened over the past few weeks. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome back. I've got a belly full of chips and I'm ready to preview a few Premier League games.
That's brilliant. I love it. So have I. We're ready to rock now, baby.
Yeah. Right, let's get straight into it. First game we're going to talk about this week is the matchup of Newcastle United and Manchester City at St. James's Park.
Yeah, we're going to go for this one just because Newcastle are actually in relatively good form at the minute, which is kind of surprising and annoying in equal measure. But
it's surprising to everybody, really.
Yeah, but City,
As I keep saying, you have to take your hat off to Steve Bruce. He's proved his doubters wrong, and they're doing relatively well. They're actually doing very well for where you would have expected them to be.
Yeah, I was expecting them to be rooted to the bottom, but like 14th ain't all that bad considering. But they've won their last two, haven't lost a game in their last three, so...
Yeah, won three of their last five and have drawn one of those games. So they've only lost one game in five, which is pretty impressive.
That is good for them, but they are now welcome City to town. But a slightly even more weakened City now that Aguero is going to be out for a few weeks, which adds another interesting dynamic into it.
Does it make that much of a difference, though, when they've got Gabriel Jesus and Kevin De Bruyne playing the way he is and Sterling playing the way he is? You know, I don't think they'll have much to fear from Newcastle.
You might be right, but I'm not entirely sold on Jesus this season.
I think that biggest fear they will probably have of Newcastle is of Newcastle just stifling them.
They will try. Don't get that wrong. They will try, but just wouldn't surprise me now if they cause City a bit more trouble than people are expecting.
I will say I watched the, as probably everybody did, the City-Chelsea game at the weekend. Cracking game of football.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Chelsea deserved their lead when they went in front. And I think for about 10 minutes after that, Chelsea controlled the game and it looked like it was City were going to have a bad day. Chelsea looked really well, but then City kind of got a lucky enough goal back. And
it was a deflection. It was a lucky goal.
From then it was all City and there was only ever going to be one winner. The Chelsea goal kind of shocked City and you could see the heads dropped with City.
Mm.
And they were probably thinking to what happened the week before with Liverpool and whatnot. But as soon as they got their goal back, there was no stopping them. And we've seen the City of old. And I think for a team like Newcastle facing that City side, they're not going to have their best day.
Probably right. And like when we are a prediction podcast, and I will predict City will win, but I do also think that Newcastle are good at what they do when they choose to frustrate the living daylights out of teams.
Yeah.
And I just think now another person down in Aguero, this squad isn't as massively strong as it was maybe at the start of the season, obviously, because we've a lot of players out injured for City. So I looked at this fixture and I just thought, interesting, but it's 12:30. Maybe the patrons won't be as drunk and as rowdy as they are at a 5:30 game at St. James's Park, or that might be a subdued atmosphere and City will go and walk it. But I don't know, just something is just telling me that this is going to be a tricky one for City.
I have noticed recently, over the past few weeks, a lot of signs that Pep is starting to feel the pressure a little bit. He's not his normal, composed, assured, cocky self.
Oh, 100%. Even on the sideline on Saturday, when he was bringing players on, you could see him remonstrating like mad with them, trying to drill what he wanted from them. You could tell he was really, really wanted the 3 points. He knew that they had to win. Now, what ramifications that'll have in the Premier League, we just don't know. But he knew that that game was just a must win and there was no other result that could be tolerated.
Like, if you think back to last season when Liverpool had at one point a 10-point lead with a game in hand, they had realistically a 7-point lead. City never looked phased. Pep never looked phased. He always looked confident. He always knew he knew they were better than Liverpool, and he knew they had an opportunity to catch them, and he knew Liverpool would drop points somewhere along the way. But I think he's looking at the Liverpool side now and thinking, we need to win every game, every single game, and we were already 6 points behind, 7 points behind,
nine behind Liverpool.
We're already nine behind Liverpool, and it's
got
not
there in the end.
Yeah. and it's not even Christmas. And I think that you can see the pressure is definitely there, starting to build on him.
And it is, and I just don't think that he thinks that this Liverpool side will capitulate like everyone is expecting.
Yeah.
I think he knows now. December is going to be a clogged month for Liverpool. He knows he has to make up ground by January.
I think if he had taken 3 points from Anfield, he would have been back to the cocky Pep that we all know and love, because his big target, and we said it loads of times on this podcast, because those two teams are so good and they drop so few points, it comes down to what happens in the two games between them.
Yeah.
And Liverpool have the upper hand now.
Oh, big time. Big time. You're probably looking at 95 points to win the league, right?
Yeah.
As it stands now, City are on course to, I think, 80?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 81, I think they're on course. That obviously isn't going to win the league. They're going to have to pretty much run the table.
Yeah.
They can afford maybe one, two more losses, and then you're looking at just green all the way. You're looking at wins. And if they don't do that, they will not win this league. Whereas Liverpool now are on course, I think, to hit 100 points. So I know obviously these things will change because we have only played 13 games. That is still quite a fairly large sample size. This is a third of a whole season.
Yeah.
You know, but they know that their form has to basically be perfect. And you could see it in his body language. On Saturday evening, he was absolutely going wild on the sideline. You could tell this was the pressure. And I think it was pressure manifested. You could feel it from him that he just knew they had to win, and that if they didn't win, that he was going to be under even more pressure, and you could see the sarky, snide, miserable Pep coming out again.
I think I read a very interesting interview with Riyad Mahrez yesterday. The City players were well aware what had happened at Selhurst Park.
Mm. Oh, of course they were.
And the manner of Liverpool's victory at Selhurst Park. Mm. And Mahrez talks about how they knew that there was no other option other than winning.
Yeah.
So you can tell, as much as Pep and Klopp talk about how they don't look at each other, you can tell. That's all they look at.
That's like golfers that say they don't look at the scoreboard. Will you stop it? Just cop on to yourselves. Absolutely everyone does it, and City are including that. And one of my friends said it to me on Saturday evening, and we both laughed when he said it. He said, imagine how much frustrating and tormenting it must be to be a Man City fan this year, because you're looking at Liverpool thinking, every fucking week we're slipping, they're going to slip up here, they're going to slip up here, and then they find a late winner. It must be tormenting. And again, that applies to City players. They must think, oh, Liverpool look like Liverpool look like they're going to drop points here. It's that, oh, we might be able to make up ground on them here this weekend. And then bang, that's the hopes are dashed.
It's so soul-destroying. And we talked about a lot of times on this podcast about the psychology of being the team that plays first and the team that plays second.
Yeah.
And for some reason, more often than not, Liverpool are getting to play first, and it just means that the pressure is building on City, and I think it has to be harder to be the team that plays second, especially when you're seeing your closest rival. Well, they're not the closest rival, but in terms of the league, what you'd consider
theoretically
your closest rival, just getting shitty wins like Liverpool got against Crystal Palace. It's United under Fergie. Yeah, exactly.
It's what they used to do. That's how they won leagues. But anyway, we're ranting here.
Anyway, let's make a prediction for Newcastle versus City.
City, I think. But I think this one will be a tough one. I think it'll be 2-1 City. But I think they'll have to fight tooth and nail to get these 3 points. Because, and I must say it, we've pretty much pulled down our pants and shat on Newcastle all year because we thought they were destined to go down, and all in the fashion their season started and the mood around the club. But in fairness to Steve Bruce and the squad, they've rallied around him and they've given it everything, and they're getting the results for now. And you know what? Fair play to them. And I do think they're going to frustrate City for a long while in this type of tie, barring obviously City doing what they do to some teams and scoring really early and just controlling it from the outset. But if Newcastle can hold them for a half an hour, 45 minutes, I can see him really frustrating the life out of him, and it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility to get a draw, but I think it's more likely City will eventually get the breakthrough, but I do think it will be very hard work.
I think it'll probably be an easy victory for City and myself.
I like that we vary so much.
We're going for the same result, but at least we're going about it different ways. Either way, City are going to win it. Let's move on to the next game, which we've listed for Spurs versus Bournemouth.
Yeah.
The Mourinho machine.
The Mourinho machine is... this could be an interesting one, I think, because you always have that immediate... Well, it's quite common. You have that immediate boost from a new manager. And obviously, when Mourinho steps in to your dressing room, you're happy about it most of the time.
I will say, though, the boost didn't last that long because
they
nearly let that lead slip, and they were 3 goals up and conceded 2 goals, and it looked very much like it was going to end 3-3.
It did. That is a worrying point, but at the same time, they still got the 3 points, and that was their first win in what, 5 games, I think it was.
Yeah.
You know, they hadn't won the previous 4 anyway. But again, results, that's what Mourinho does. But you always have that instant boost and then it fades. Yeah. Just be interesting to see if this carries into it. Now, Bournemouth are in fairly poor form. They've lost their last 2 and they've only won 1 of their last 5. And that was against United. That was good. That was brilliant, actually. From a personal point of view, that was a terrible performance from United. But and that kind of, again, feeds into it because they didn't have much to beat that day.
Yeah.
They haven't been in good form lately. They've been shipping goals left, right and centre. They're looking rocky at the back. So, to me, this looks a good opportunity for Mourinho to get the bandwagon rolling. I think this is a great fixture for Mourinho at the right time.
Yeah, I was just thinking that at the weekend. When I was thinking about why Daniel Levy made the decision he did, looking at the fixtures, the first few fixtures that Spurs have, they're on paper what you'd consider to be handier fixtures. And if you're going to bring in a new manager, it's better off to bring him in a few games that you know he's going to get 3 points or are going to be good for building confidence.
Try and give him an easy start.
You don't want to be bringing him in the week before they play Manchester City or, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
So I think there was definitely some thinking in that. I think you're right. I think Bournemouth are in very poor form. And to be honest, if their form doesn't change, maybe it won't be Eddie Howe that's leaving them, but yeah, them leaving Eddie Howe.
Maybe. I think the goals have dried up. From like, you had the two Wilsons, you had Josh King, you had Fraser. They were lively for a few weeks.
Yeah.
The goals have just dried up a small bit, and you'd worry. You'd worry. I would anyway, and I think Spurs will score a couple here, and I don't think Bournemouth to match them. Likewise, what you just predicted for Newcastle City, I think this is going to be an easy win for Spurs, unfortunately, because I like Bournemouth and I'd like to see them regain a bit of form again. But and when they play well, they do play really well as a unit. They move the ball well. They're nice, easy on the eye, and they're not afraid to have a go. But I just don't see it working out from in the City of London Stadium, whatever the hell it's called. What's it called? Well, Tottenham Stadium, yeah. Just call it
Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, both teams are sitting in 10th and 11th in the Premier League. Spurs are on 17 points while Bournemouth are on 16 points. And they both have nearly identical form over the last five games. So there's not a whole lot between them other than the fact that Spurs have a new manager.
Yeah, but Spurs' capabilities far outshine Bournemouth's. And
you would think so on paper,
I think the likelihood is that they'll reach their capabilities a lot quicker than Bournemouth will. I think they could rebound faster, and the catalyst could be Mourinho's arrival. And if he sets the team up in his way and they start to get results, you might see a kind of a carrying on of that form. But I think this is the perfect fixture at the right time for Mourinho, and I think he will make it 6 points out of six.
I'd be very interested to see whether he starts Eriksen this weekend.
No, I don't think he will.
I don't think he will either. I think part of his remit was making plans for developing a side that doesn't include Christian Eriksen.
I would say so. I think he'd be gone in January.
Yeah.
He should have been gone in August by the looks of it.
I think the fact that he didn't start with Eriksen the weekend just gone spoke volumes.
Interesting he didn't start for Tongan either. Started Alvaral and Sanchez. I wonder if
Tongan wasn't even in the squad.
Yeah. I don't know if he's injured. Did he get injured playing with Belgium or anything? I doubt it. He would even been playing because they were qualified, weren't they? Mm. But anyway, that's a European, different competition, different gravy. But I just noticed that neither of them in. Maybe he's just going to say, look, you're completely... Maybe that was the first thing he did. He said, look, lay down the law. The 2 year, the squad is tainted here. You're dragging the club down. You can both sit it out for a few weeks. And if you both want to fuck off in January, you can.
Yeah.
But it's obviously more likely Eriksen will be the one that goes. But we'll see what happens.
It certainly seems to be starting to plan life without both of them. Yeah. Either one or both of them. And probably any manager that went in there probably would have had that remit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe... I don't know if it's getting a bit too soap opera-y, but maybe part of Pochettino's problem was he couldn't let his friendship aside with those players and couldn't start planning forward without them. Who knows? But anyway, let's make a prediction for this game. I think Spurs are going to win it just by virtue of the fact they're at home and they have the kind of Mourinho bounce and that Bournemouth aren't on the best of form.
Same, yeah. I think Spurs maybe by two or three. I could see them winning it easy enough in the end. But you know what? This is one I actually hope I'm wrong in because I really, really want Bournemouth to bounce back because when they play well, they're class to watch and they're a really likeable club to build up from nothing with Eddie Howe all the way. I really hope this turns around quickly because you don't want to see them fighting for their lives. You'd hope that they can't be in that situation. They're probably too good, but you're just hoping that they turn around quickly.
More often than not, that kind of form comes at the vitality and not when they're away. So it's probably amounting too far for them, but it would be nice to see them doing well. Let's move on to another game in London, an all London affair, which is Chelsea versus West Ham. This has to, West Ham are in awful form.
Yeah, they are. Now, as we said, as your throat nearly exploded there, as we said, they nearly snatched a draw against Spurs despite looking absolutely and utterly atrocious for 75 minutes. Good God above in heaven. Spurs could have been 7 or 8 up. Kane had the goal ruled out for offside.
Would you like to know West Ham's current form?
Oh, sure. It's probably 4 or 5 losses in a row, is it? Or what's
it's... A loss, a loss, a loss, a draw, a loss.
Yeah, that 1 point out of possible 15 says a lot, really. That's absolutely tumbled down the
diabolical
table.
And with the squad.
And that's saying something about this year's Premier League when there isn't a stone's throw between so many of the clubs, considering they're all in kind of here and there form. So the fact that they've managed to tumble down
that's a squad that includes players like Manuel Lanzini and Forlans and Anderson
They can't. I said this weeks ago, though. They have the worst back four in the Premier League, I'd say. Maybe bar Norwich's. They have an absolutely atrocious
back four. They have enough forward playing players to score goals. And yeah, they haven't even been scoring goals. I know they scored two at the weekend, but prior to that, they haven't been scoring goals. It's just, I don't know what's going on at West Ham, but the form is atrocious. And it's, to be honest, it's not looking great for Pellegrini.
No, it's not at all. I think it'll be sooner rather than later he'll go, and I'd say he'd be more than happy, because they will concede too many goals to be a fixture of anywhere near the part of the table they want to be. They want to be top six. No, well, not the top six would be unrealistic. They want to be at least trying to push into a Europa place, or maybe being kind of around what you'd class the Everton's, the Sheffield United's, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th. They're not going to be nowhere near that this season. They're absolutely just so bad at the back. And I know you said they're top heavy, but who's creating the chances? Who's the one supplying the forward play? There's not much there. They're not that strong. And oh God,
we spoke at the start of the season about West Ham and Everton being the two teams that were going to challenge the top six. And look where they are now.
Well, in fairness, I said Leicester. So, denying me that one.
No, I mean, we spoke about Leicester and Chelsea and how well they were going to do, and they're sitting in the top four. But we did also mention that West Ham
were kind of the same ilk. We said after a couple of games, we said, this is the type of season where it smelled of the season where Leicester went and won because everyone else was floundering.
Yeah.
And we said it, and we said that maybe West Ham, Everton, and Leicester were maybe the three that could break in. Now, obviously, we got one right, but look at the other two, 15th and 16th. It's absolutely ridiculous, but yeah.
But there's no excuse for either of those teams being in that position.
To get back to the fixture, like, Chelsea could have had a penalty early on against City, played well, scored.
They have Kante back.
They could have had, they had a good few chances. They were unlucky at times. I thought if they had snatched a draw from that game, it wouldn't have been a complete disservice to City either.
Yeah.
They were played well despite the defeat, and to me, at home at Stamford Bridge, West Ham coming with an absolutely atrocious recent form. I know we're kind of going through it sounds like it's an easy game, but I just can't see how West Ham raise a gallop here.
Yeah, but we said that West Ham have 1 point in their last 15. Chelsea have won 6 of their last 7 games. They're absolutely flying. The squad looks brilliant. They have their best player back. When Kante scored against City at the weekend, I thought to myself, if there was one play, if you told Manchester City with all their money that they could only buy one player from the Premier League in the next transfer window, I guarantee it'd be an N'Golo Kante.
Yeah,
He's the one player probably from any squad that City would want.
Well, I'd say Virgil van Dijk maybe.
Well, maybe Virgil van Dijk.
Can't buy a central defender doing that will stay fit or actually hold his form.
But Kante in midfield, he's brilliant. He's probably the best in the world in his position at the moment.
He's incredible.
It's hard to see anyone that's better.
Yeah, they really, really missed him. We did say it, but it's evident. But when he came back, played against Liverpool, scored, was very good that game. Nearly rescued a draw for Chelsea, and was brilliant again at the weekend. Scored and. It's weird to see him maybe rushing forward and being in that position.
He had another opportunity that he came very close and missed. You know, it was probably an easier one than the one he actually scored.
Maybe Frank has given him a bit more license this year to have a bit more of a cup. But he's shown brilliant form under Frank Lampard.
I wonder, is it something that he's asked for? Because it was Sarri who started to play him a bit more forward when Sarri brought in Jorginho.
A
lot of people were given out saying, you know, Jorginho's not as good in the position and Kante is better as a holding midfielder. But the fact that Frank Lampard has continued to give him more license to go forward, maybe it's something that the player is requesting.
It's quite possible. It is very possible. And
he's within his rights to request it as well. He's put in the mileage.
Seems to be making it work too, which is the most important thing of all. If it was a complete and utter disaster, you'd say, okay, fuck back into defensive midfield there for yourself and just do what you're told. Yeah. Break up the play, supply the lads going forward and just work like you always have. But look, he's scoring goals. He's come back from the injury. You hope now he'll stays fit for a while because they could do with him. And it's nice to see a player that good play just as a spectator.
Yeah.
You know, you want him to stay fit now for a while and hopefully he does. But going back to this fixture, forlorn hope for West Ham. I think they're dangerously close to becoming one of my three. Yeah. Now, anytime I predict someone going into the bottom three, they win. But anyway, they're dangerously close to becoming that team where you're saying they're going to go down if they don't cap on.
I don't see them winning this game. The form that Chelsea are on and Chelsea at home, I think this is definitely, Chelsea are going to bounce back from their loss against City and they're going to win this game.
Despite that loss, it's easy to take a loss, a 2-1 loss away from home to City. It's easy to take that loss because they're such a dominant, brilliant team. But, and a good feeling is still buzzing around that squad this season. So I just don't see how the Chelsea don't rebound.
And a loss against City is nearly a free loss. Like, your fans are never going to get on your back because you lost to City. No team in the world.
Especially not away from home. And especially when you've scored as well.
Exactly.
Because it's nice to put one over on City. Even if you're beaten, you score a goal against them. It shows them that you're not to be messed with, you know, type of thing. Like,
even when Watford shipped 8 against them, I'm sure the fans went, well, City. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
To an extent, yeah, exactly. But anyway, yeah, for me, Chelsea, handy.
Lovely. Let's move on to Leicester versus Everton. Two teams with very differing fortunes. Almost a carbon copy of the last game we just spoke about.
Yeah, I said it to you obviously off air just before we come on. I said I'm doing an accumulator this weekend because it seems like one of those weekends where you just feel you can get every game right.
Yeah.
And again, we're moving on here. Everton, for the love and honour of God, what happened last weekend against Norwich?
Norwich haven't won a game in 6.5 years, I think it is, since they've beat Manchester City. And in fact, they've lost every game since then. Have they even got a draw? I don't think they have.
From memory, no.
And then they go to Goodison Park, the home of Everton, and beat them 2-0.
Yeah. And it says a lot. They've scored 3 goals away from home this season.
Yeah.
All at Merseyside. 1 the first game of the season against Liverpool when beaten 4-1, and 2 at Everton. It shows where Everton are right now. They're, like, as we did start this podcast with manager talk, and we issued a caveat that Silva could be gone by this fixture. Wouldn't surprise me if he was, but that performance from Everton would scare you. It was that bad.
I don't know how the ownership or the management at the football club can be sitting there and,
after pumping in the money they have, I know we've
after pumping
blew
in the
face from saying it. Yeah.
Like, whatever about going out and getting beaten by teams around the top six, you can take that on the chin. But when the team that is rock bottom of the table hasn't won in months comes to your home ground and you've invested that amount of money in the squad and that amount of money in your manager and you get walked over, it's not good.
No, it's not. And we've kind of talked about the bigger teams earlier, but to me, Leicester are the form team in the Premier League. They're playing the best football in the Premier League at the minute.
Yeah.
To my eye, anyway. Maybe I'm wrong, but Liverpool are grinding out results, as we well know.
Yeah, Leicester have won their last 5. There's no other team in the Premier League who've done that. Liverpool have won their last 4 and drawn 1. City have
lost to Liverpool, obviously.
Lost to Liverpool and won the 4 around that. And then Chelsea have lost last City, week and won the 4 before that. So Leicester are literally the only team that have won their last 5 in the Premier League.
They're absolute, and they've been value for the results as well. That's the thing.
None of it has been by luck.
No.
They have been pure quality against everyone they played against.
Yeah. Now, the penalty thing at the weekend was a bit weird, but you know what? They were so far clear of Brighton. They could have hammered them. Jesus, that could have been a cricket score, to be honest. Yeah. They had a break of chances, couldn't put it in the back of the net. And to be honest, again, unless Everton have a massive change in fortune, I did say at the time, and they did win their next game, but I thought Andre Gomes' horrific injury might be a catalyst for them to kickstart their season. It might kind of everyone rally around the flag, but it has seemed to evaporate as quickly as it arrived.
It's kind of done the opposite just simply because he was probably the only player they had left that was playing well. But like they have the players to play better. Everton have the players to beat Leicester on their day.
And Seamus Coleman is woefully out of form, their leader as well. Yeah. He really is. Like, I don't see him. Never mind. We're not going into Republic of Ireland talk. But he is really out of form at the minute. They have so many players woefully out of form. Can't buy a goal. It's sad times. And like, obviously, we're both Liverpool fans, rivalry, whatever. But Jesus, this is getting serious for Everton now. Like,
Everton's next game after this is the Merseyside derby.
And you know, it's the Anfield Merseyside derby. Yeah. It ain't the Goodison one, which is just a sad indictment of.
To be honest, I don't see Marco Silva making it as far as the Merseyside derby, especially if he loses against Leicester, which I'm pretty much guarantee he will, because the owners are going to look at this and go, "We're not going to go to our neighbours and get embarrassed. Let's try and get a new manager in here and get the mood up, get the new manager effect, and then maybe even scrape a draw."
Yeah.
And as we know, form will go out the window in these games. It always does. Like ever, we've seen the last time Liverpool and Everton play, Liverpool scored one by a scabby goal from Origi, you know, and Everton weren't in great form at the time, and Liverpool were expected to go and romp home.
Yeah.
So the Merseyside derby could be a bit like that, but in the current form Everton are in, I don't see it.
No, no, not at all. And like, you're looking at Leicester, as we said, they're in absolutely flying form. They're razor sharp. They're tearing teams apart with brilliant moves. Like, Chilwell has been brilliant. He'd pop a pimple on your nose with a ball. He's just so good for deliveries.
Jamie Vardy's right to the best, back to the best form of his life.
Yeah, exactly. Whoa, without doubt, he's flying it.
He can't help but score at this point.
Exactly. And Maddison is playing brilliantly. Tielemans is top class. I don't care what anyone says. I think he's brilliant. You have Harvey Barnes, young lad coming in. It's just everyone is playing well at Leicester at the minute. We've spoken about their back four. Even Johnny Evans is actually okay at the minute, which is strange. But, like, to me, this fixture, unless Everton have a completely revamp of form in a week.
I will say, though, you can correct me if I'm wrong, because I was only reading the Leicester game at the weekend. I didn't see the footage. I was only reading the news ticker on Sky Sports app. Mm. But did Johnny Evans go off injured?
I cannot remember from memory. He could have.
I just
we'll say he has, but just under the fence, they've conceded 3 less goals than anyone else in the Premier League this season.
He actually did, because Wes...
Oh no, sorry, Chelsea, sorry. Chelsea have conceded... Oh no, sorry, never mind. Chelsea have conceded 19. Yeah, Leicester have conceded 8, Liverpool have conceded 11, that's the closest. Conceding 8 goals in 13 games is serious going. Serious going for them.
I remember now that Evans did go off and Wes Morgan came on for him.
Right.
And that's not a bad deputy.
It's not
to have.
The worst deputy in the world at all. He's not blessed with pace by any means, but he's a unit and he'll do a job for you.
When you've got Chiyonsu there, who's an absolute flying
he's unbelievable,
machine, you don't need to worry
he's
about
been
pace.
Class, what a find for them. What a find.
Absolutely.
He's been brilliant. But anyway, we may as well wrap this up because we're both in agreement.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very tough afternoon at the office for Everton.
It's 3 points for Leicester, is all you can really see. Let's move on to Wolves, who are playing Sheffield United, who have to be so disappointed that they didn't get 3 points against United.
I'd say so. The poor, poor bastards.
Apart from 7 minutes where United played football, Sheffield United were the far better side.
Mm-hmm.
Far better side.
This is going to be a tasty fixture. You fifth versus sixth. Are they both unbeaten in 5 games? That's... Do you know, this is going to be a cracker of a game.
Yeah.
This game, like, Wolves are playing unreal football as well at the minute. Jimenez's goal at the weekend was a brilliant goal. Brilliant team goal.
Where did this Sheffield United team come from?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Like, how is a team that's literally just been promoted to the Premier League this season with a squad of players that nobody's ever heard of, apart from us because we're Irish. Most of them are Republic of Ireland players. But how, like, they're sitting in 6th place in the Premier League. They've nearly beaten United and never looked...
Should have, dude, or by far the better team.
Should have beaten United and never looked like they feared United for a minute.
No,
you have to take your hat off them. That's incredible going.
Defensively, very organised as well.
Yeah.
Very organised.
Very organised all
over. By my
pitch.
Calculations, they've conceded the 3rd least goals in the Premier League behind Leicester and Liverpool, as we were just talking about. That is unreal organisation at the back from a team that have just been promoted. When you look at their counterparts, Norwich have conceded 28. Not Watford. What the hell are you on about? Who came up last season?
Norwich, Sheffield United, and Aston Villa.
And Villa, sorry, my God, I had the biggest brain fart of all time. In fairness, Villa haven't been too bad with 20, but to only concede 12 goals in 13 games.
Sheffield United do this thing, and I've watched them in the last few games.
What type of a brain fart was that? I can't even remember who came up.
I know, yeah.
It's too late.
And you're supposed to be a sports reporter who does a Premier League podcast.
Look, sorry about that brain fart, lads, but we're leaving it in to show you. We are mere mortals too.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on.
Anyway, as I was going to say, I've watched Sheffield United in their last few games, and I think it's really interesting what they do. Every single player on that side works incredibly hard. And when a member of the opposition has the ball, there's 3 Sheffield United players around them every single time.
They do break
and
hearts.
They just frustrate the life out of teams.
Yeah.
And it's like Chris Wilder has realised he has a squad that aren't as good as probably most of the Premier League squads. Mm. So he's just going to beat everyone with work rate and pure determination. And they've been brilliant at it.
Where in the name of God did you get Lundstrom from as well? He played 10 games in the championship last year. He wasn't even like a regular in the squad. And this year he's been one of the best centre halves in the Premier League this year, scoring a bag of goals. It's it's ridiculous. Like, it's their upturn in form has been brilliant. And you know what?
It'll be interesting to see how they fare out with the fixture congestion in over Christmas, because then, normally with teams that come up from the Championship or teams that would expect to be in the lower half of the Premier League, when it gets to, you know, the heavy fixture congestion, that's when they start dropping a few points. But, you know, Sheffield United, how many points have they got at the moment? They're on 18 points. You know, they're not too far away from, they're halfway to their goal.
Yeah.
So that they could lose 10 games and still go on and stay in the Premier League. 100%. And they'd be very happy with that. In saying all that, Wolves is not an easy fixture at Molineux for them.
Not at all. Not at all. Like, I just want to give a big up to Stevens and Egan, two Irish players playing left and left back and centre half. They've been class playing together, and the upturn in form for them, both with Sheffield and at the Republic of Ireland, has been unreal. But they're dealing with a player who has actually learned how to play soccer, Adama Traore. Yeah. He has been brilliant for Wolves in the last few weeks. He's really gotten his act together in product wise. We all knew, like, the physical attributes, he had the speed, the power, like, he was explosive.
Yeah.
But his end product, his crossing, has come up no end. He's scored two goals and set up a rake in the last few games, and he's just looking a new player again. And he is a handful to deal with. And then you have the likes of Jimenez. Moutinho scored an absolute perler. I don't know if you saw it.
Yeah.
The free kick from the corner, just from the corner of the box. Oh my God.
Ruben Neves has scored 17 goals since he entered the Premier League.
One inside the box or something.
One inside the box.
Jesus. I that was a complete guess. I didn't know that. But when you look at his highlight reel, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, like, he's a hero for a screamer.
Yeah, he is. But they're brilliant to watch at the minute, and they're getting results. And again, we've said it multiple times this season, when other teams are floundering, they're rock solid. They haven't lost a game in five again. And we came here we were 13 weeks in, maybe 9 weeks ago.
Yeah,
when they were in the kind of throes of the Europa League at the start of the season, they were suffering for it. We could see
They played something like 24 fixtures already.
I think they're closer to 30 now. They had a couple, good few weeks ago, they played 24. But they've seemed to come to terms with that now, and they're flying, and they're in really good form. I'm actually really looking forward to seeing this game. I know it probably won't be on TV it's 2:00 Sunday. Norwich and Arsenal will be on TV. You can probably bet your bottom dollar that. But that'll be a cracker of a game.
Of all the fixtures we spoke about so far, I think this is the hardest one for me to call.
For sure, for sure. I was kind of speaking, I was thinking about it, and that's why I'm going to draw. You can't be wrong unless you want. No, you know, in that sense, this is one where I will get splinters in my arse for sitting on the fence, because I can't call that. And I think their positions in the table show that there's only a point between them, and they're both deserving of where they are. And it'll be a cracker of a game. This will be a cracker of a game. I don't know if Sheffield will, like we've said it, you know, against the big teams, and especially away from home, they can try and sit in and like destroy you mentally by boring the life out of you.
Yeah.
But they're not doing that as often in the last few games. They've gained in confidence.
I think I've noticed, and I pointed this out a few times on the podcast, they pick their fixtures. If it's a team they think they can beat, or Chris Wilder thinks they can beat, he'll tell them to go for it. Mm. Whereas if it's Liverpool or Leicester or someone like that, then that's when they'll sit back and try and frustrate the teams. But we seen it a couple of weeks ago against, was it Newcastle? They just went, it was West Ham.
West Ham, yeah.
West Ham, they just went all out and they hammered them.
They won 3-0, wasn't it?
The 3-0, yeah.
And Wolves aren't afraid to flood players forward. You might see Sheffield hitting them on the counter here, and they're very good at it too.
Yeah.
They're very good at it. So it'll be interesting to see. Draw for me anyway.
I'm going to go with Wolves just fair because enough. They're at home. Sheffield have had a good run of form, and I favour Wolves.
Do you know what?
But only just.
I think it must be said as well, Sheffield showed fair balls to go and get an equaliser after being hit with that gut punch from United. Like, you're 2-0 up.
Yeah.
There's 18 minutes left, and then bang, you're hit with for three very quickly, and you thought, you're thinking, no. They could have every reason to lie down there and just accept it, especially as a newly promoted team. But they went and they found an equaliser, and fair play, that takes balls.
United didn't even deserve a point out of that game. All the points in that game, all 3 points should have went to Sheffield United. They were far better, apart from just 7 minutes. And I said it to you earlier today, I think that entire 7 minutes, good spell, for United came through Daniel James.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He gave us, Daniel James gave us a cameo of the player that he could potentially be. And he literally grabbed that team by the scruff of its neck. And probably if he was a little bit more mature or senior, he could probably do that for 90 minutes in the team. And he's definitely one to watch. But I think that Sheffield United, apart from that 7 minutes, definitely
they were the better team, without doubt,
to win that game.
So you're going Wolves anyway?
I'm going Wolves, yeah.
All right, fair enough. We'll kick on out from a kind of a mid-table, interesting clash to a bottom of the table, absolute miserable must-win for both teams that are in horrible form.
Yeah.
We're talking about Southampton and Watford.
Yeah.
And interestingly, it'll be on TV Saturday evening at 5:30.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good game, though.
Do you know what? It'll be one of those ones that a lot of people will be intrigued by it.
Yeah,
Want to see where they'll want to see the fight. They'll want to see how this game fares out, because it will have big ramifications already at the bottom of the table.
Yeah, I mean, after Watford got their win last week, and I thought, you know, that was the catalyst for them kicking on, and then Burnley came.
Yeah.
And put three past them. And Burnley, who aren't in great form themselves.
No. Well, no, Burnley have won their last three now, haven't they? Oh, no, hold on. Their last two, sorry.
Their last two.
Run of form, but
including the game against Watford, they've won their last two.
Yeah.
But prior to those two games, they were doing poor.
Yeah, they were. Was it West Ham they beat as well? I think that doesn't say much. They beat West Ham 3-0. So in fairness, Burnley have scored 6 in the last two games. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Wood and Barnes are scoring, in fairness. So.
Yeah, but I think for a few games before that, Barnes was injured. Wood was on his own. But as soon as Barnes came back, they seem to be kicking on again.
Yeah, they're in good form.
But I think this one...
This is a toughish one, isn't it? It's not... You'd imagine you'd... To me, I don't know. This is a real tough game for me to call.
I really
what Watford turn up, I think.
I really like both sides, as you know.
Mm.
And I really like both managers. And I kind of want them both to win, because I want them both to get out of this funk that they're in.
Mm.
But they're not doing anything to instill any confidence in me.
No.
I think... Oh, God, it's hard to call. I think... Southampton, because they're at home, I think the mood is terrible at both clubs, but Southampton will get the lift of their home fans, and I think that's probably the only reason I'd give Southampton the win.
In fairness to Southampton, it was a gut shot to them with Lacazette equalising in the 96th minute. That would have been a huge one away at them for the Emirates. That was a good performance, but did that do to them mentally is the question. And then to me again, the next question is what Watford turn up. They've been very unpredictable this season. They've played well enough in patches, then they've ended up losing 8-0 to City. Do you know, you have a very varied picture of what Watford are this season, and
unfortunately,
it's so hard to call.
Unfortunately for Watford, it's really, and it's a terrible thing to say, but it kind of boils down to what De La Feo turns up.
He's been key. He's been incremental to them this season.
Yeah, and it's
instrumental, even Jesus.
It's an indictment as to where they are in the league, that they really only have one player at this point who's good enough to win games in the Premier League.
Yeah. Well, without doubt. I kind of agree with you in the sense that this game will probably be swung by home advantage, but then you remember the Leicester game and you're thinking, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I think Southampton will have taken a lot of positives out of that Arsenal game.
You might hope so, but then again, that 96-minute equaliser, it depends what way that mentally affects them. If that sucked a bit of the life out of them, thinking, oh, we're going to get an important win here now after losing 3 in the bounce.
If you offered Southampton a draw, 1 point against Arsenal before the game, they would have taken your hand off.
As you said, it depends if Hasenhüttl can frame that as a positive and move forward from that.
Yeah.
Then you might favour Southampton. Just depends what Watford turn up. If they turn up like they did in the second half against Arsenal that day, they're in with a shout, they might actually win the game. But if they turn up against, say, maybe the first half against City, Watford, then Southampton will win.
Yeah, yeah.
They, like we've mentioned, that they don't have really any established goal scorer. Me and you could play up front for Southampton, and if that Watford turn up, Southampton will beat them. So I'm marginally favouring Southampton, and I think they'll just sneak it.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there, and I think it's basically down to home advantage and probably a little bit buoyancy from doing well for most of the game against against Arsenal. Okay, what we'll do is we'll take a little break there, and then when we come back we'll rattle through the rest of the fixtures and our predictions. Hello, welcome back. Okay, we've got 4 more fixtures to get through, and we'll try and do that very quickly.
Yeah, we've kept you too long already.
We've kept you too long already, but you missed us because we took a week off.
Yeah.
We're going to try our best not to do that anymore, but...
Life. If you want to pay us money, if you want to go onto the website at PremierLeaguePreview.com and fire a few quid into the Patreon, you're more than welcome to. It'll help us hit our retirement goal where we can just pump endless good content to you for,
yeah, but don't,
for
don't,
the
don't
long
go,
days.
Don't do it at that website. Go to PLPreview.com.
Oh, PLPreview.com, of course. Those folks over at PremierLeaguePreview.com are just awful. They're scammers. Don't throw a thing at them.
I don't even think that's a website.
Nah, it probably isn't. Why wouldn't you go for that website instead of...
I think the domain was taken.
Ah, someone is sitting on that now.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, using it for their click farm or something.
Yeah. Anyway,
Liverpool Brighton at Anfield.
At Anfield, this one with,
does this even deserve more than four sentences? This game
probably doesn't, but you know what? We can assume a lot of things, and then we make an ass out of you and me. So
Well, Liverpool have often assumed that they're going to beat Crystal Palace, and then they don't. So
yeah, Brighton are porous enough at the back bar, a mighty Shane Duffy. And
the fact that Liverpool haven't lost a game at Anfield since April 2017 doesn't bode well for
it doesn't
Brighton
bode well for Brighton's chances of winning, but drawing is another story. You'd imagine that Liverpool will win this game, and I'm going to predict they will, but I don't know. These are the type of games that Liverpool would lose in previous seasons, or not lose, maybe draw and stutter.
Yeah.
They're the type of foregone conclusions that 65 minutes in, it's still nil all, and wait a minute, it ain't a foregone conclusion anymore. They will look to score a few goals early, try and put this one to bed early, use a bit of the squad, rotate it, because, we, as you said, Liverpool have a good few fixtures coming up in the next while, especially December is going to be ridiculous. So I think they'll try put this one to bed early, and if they can score a goal or two early, they will win, and they'll win comfortably. If Brighton can hang on and dangle on, they might get a draw. But I think that's slim chance, and it's no chance of a Brighton win, to be honest.
Yeah, I think this is going to be fairly run-of-the-mill training fixture for Liverpool, to be honest. And I don't like speaking that confidently about Liverpool, but I just don't think Brighton are good enough to even stay in the Premier League, never mind get a point against Liverpool at Anfield.
Yeah, they've lost their last two. Yeah. And they are probably on a downward trajectory now, but we'll see.
Anything good that ever comes from Brighton usually comes at their home ground.
Yeah, the Amex is...
I don't know when the last time they even picked up points on the road was.
Yeah, neither do I, to be honest. I'm not an exactly massive astute follower of Brighton's away form, but...
Yeah.
They're fairly poor on the road. It's well catalogued, and they do try to do smash and grabs at home. But...
I'm going to go for a Liverpool win on this one.
Yeah, Liverpool win as well, yeah.
Okay, let's go on to the next fixture, which actually looks a little bit tasty. Burnley versus Crystal Palace.
Tasty-ish. Burnley are starting to regain their form again. They'd gone through a slump. I think they'd lost three in the bounce. Now they've won their last two.
Palace, Southampton, will probably be very disappointed by what happened at the weekend.
Palace were a better side against Liverpool for a lot of it.
Yeah, Liverpool.
More chances.
Liverpool looked laboured, would have said, for a lot of the game.
They did, but again, as we've seen, it's become a fixture of that team this season. Found a way to win ugly.
They can't keep getting away for
no, not Liverpool won't. But from, as you said, from Crystal Palace point of view, frustrating. From Zaha's point of view, it was his first goal of the season. Of course, he picked a good time to do it against Liverpool.
Yeah,
but
he said the most shots of, I think, any Premier League player
without scoring. Yeah, he had. So look, he's put that one to bed fairly quickly, but he'll want to put Bill on that now. And I don't know, to me, nice trip up to Burnley, tough place to play. Burnley in good form, Palace weak at the back, two strong men up front for Burnley. To me, it adds up to a Burnley win.
Yeah,
but I don't know, Burnley's squad to me looks, yeah, you've Jeff Hendricks still starting, and we've seen how awful he's been for the last while. I absolutely love Jeff Hendrick. That's not me trying to shit on Jeff Hendrick, but it's fairly indisputable fact that he's been poor compared to what he was a year or two ago. His form is woeful. Robbie Brady's starting to come back into the fold a bit, but he's not there yet either. You're just looking at it. What's your man McNeil? He's a tasty enough little player, Dwight McNeil. But
I think, to be honest, they're both fairly poor squads.
They are. I'm telling you now, Palace are going down. So, but
with the exception of, say, Zaha and IU and Van Aanholt on the Palace squad, and then maybe Wood and Barnes on the Burnley squad, outside of that, it's not a great... even Wood and Barnes are championship level strikers.
Yeah, I think McNeil will make into a nice player. He's young enough as well, but... Yeah, other than that, they're no great shakes. And Palace have 1 point in their last five games, and they're going to continue to go down. This is a tough enough one to call, and I'm going to call it as a draw.
Yeah, I'm going to go with a draw on this one.
Because it's much of a muchness. Burnley, I would give Burnley the slight advantage, but not enough to predict that they'll win.
No, I think it's going to be, this is going to be the last game on Match of the Day this weekend. That's what I'm going to
probably fairly solid there. Call, yeah.
Let's move
wait
on.
Wait, you see, now it'll be 5-5.
Let's talk about Norwich-Arsenal. Arsenal, like, what the hell is going on with Unai Emery?
I told you, sure, I said this at the very start of the season. It's going to be Arsenal was going to be a white knuckle ride of a roller coaster, and you're hang on and just see where you are.
It's a bit worse than a white knuckle ride at this point. They're some very poor results.
But you just have no idea what to expect at all.
Absolutely blessed to get anything from Southampton.
Yeah, oh, they were, yeah.
And considering the form that Southampton are in, and they're probably just on by the virtue of the fact that they have two of the best strikers in the world in Lacazette and Aubameyang. Mm. And that's what's keeping them afloat. Because they should have lost to Southampton, apart from Lacazette.
There was serious talk now that Mourinho might have been lined up by Arsenal. Do you think Spurs pulled that trigger case that happened as an endurance policy, almost in case they lost him?
This is kind of what I was intimating at the start of the podcast, that Spurs they're looking around the league at all the other managers that could go, and they needed to snap up who was available while they could.
Yeah.
And there was obviously talk of Mourinho going to Arsenal. I think Spurs is a far better side for Mourinho. It's a much more Mourinho-esque side. I don't think he would have done so well at Arsenal, as well as he can do at Spurs, potentially. I think Emery's probably in trouble. I don't know who they're going to get to replace him, but I think you gave me a stat there before we started the podcast.
Yeah, this came up on Match of the Day. I can't claim credit for this one. It came up on Match of the Day's Twitter, I think it was. But Arsenal haven't won a Premier League game as of us recording on Monday night. They haven't won a Premier League game in 50 days. Wow. Seven weeks.
That's a long time.
It certainly is a long time.
We are recording this on Monday night, so I'm just going to take a quick check on the Monday night football and see what's happening.
Oh, yeah, we have Villa.
Villa are beating Newcastle 2-0 at the moment.
Ooh, who scored?
And it's half time, and the goals were Hourihan and Elghazi.
I can't believe you called Conor Hourihan Hourihan. But anyway, go on, Conor Hourihan. Fair play. But
good man,
that's a blow for Newcastle now. That's a big blow for Newcastle. I completely forgot that game was even on. My brain is fried. But anyway, back to the fixture at hand. This is coming at a good time for Arsenal. Even though, as we were going to completely random rant about what managers would suit Arsenal and what wouldn't, Poch could end up being a replacement there. We've discussed that maybe, but we'll move on.
I don't see it. Don't see it.
But
Pochettino was courted by Barcelona on a number of occasions, and he has come out clearly in the press and said he will never manage Barcelona because he played for Espanyol. So if he feels that way about Barcelona, then he's not going to go to Arsenal after being Spurs manager.
Yeah, well, something tells me the way that Spurs did him at the end, I don't think he'd have such a strong loyalty. But you never know, it might be to the Spurs squad, because obviously there he was very close to the squad.
Yeah, and the fans.
Yeah, true.
The fans idolised him and still do.
Yeah, true. But anyway, Back to the game at hand.
Arsenal
away at Norwich, Carrow Road. I think this fixture is coming at the perfect time for Arsenal because they are in need of a confidence booster. They haven't won one. I think they've won two of their last 13 games.
Expect on paper that Arsenal to win this game, but they're so unpredictable at the moment.
Mm. If Villa win their game tonight, as it stands, it's 2-0. Mm. They'll have won three of their last six. Arsenal haven't won three games in the last 13. That's the form that they're in. That's literally where Arsenal are at the minute.
That's piss poor.
Yeah, and like, I'm just having endless good times watching Arsenal fan TV because it's just endless source of entertainment.
It
doesn't seem like it's going to end anytime soon. Emery looks like he is on his last legs, and I don't think, even if he has a momentary upturn of form again, I don't see him seeing it out till May. I think he's gone before May. I think he could be gone at Christmas. It obviously depends on who's available, all that crack, but we won't get into it. But that's an indictment of where Arsenal are, the way they're playing and what the kind of squad they have at the minute.
They're playing poorly. He seems to be setting them up badly. He doesn't seem to be having much account of the teams he's playing against. He just seems to want to do his own thing without factoring in the qualities of the teams he's playing against. He's a victim of the very poor signings they've made.
Yes, 100%.
And the incredibly top-heavy squad he has.
Very top-heavy, and that is the issue.
And there's only one, there's only one place to look for that, and he has to look in the mirror. And if he got sacked tomorrow, he has to be able to hold his hands up and say, well, you know, it's probably fair. Yeah. In saying that, you would expect them to go to Carrow Road and beat Norwich.
I think they will, but we said that about City.
They're so unpredictable, Arsenal. Like, City weren't unpredictable when they went there. Yeah. That was a shock result. But to be honest, I wouldn't be too shocked if Norwich pulled off a result against Arsenal. Just because Arsenal are so unpredictable and poor.
Obviously, the tails are somewhat up after a dismal run of form. They went and they beat Everton 2-0 away from home. Their tails will be slightly up. They might recapture the verve they had at the start of the season when they were having a good cut off people and getting results. So you never know, but to me...
I mean, if Norwich win at the weekend, they could overtake Aston Villa and Everton
Aston Villa will be ahead now because of that Newcastle victory, as we are predicting it to be a victory, being 2-0 up.
They could overtake West Ham.
Yep.
And they could be out of the relegation zone. West Ham could go crumbling into relegation zone.
Yep.
In saying that, I'm just going to, just because on paper it's the way it should be, I'm going to say Arsenal will win the game.
I think Arsenal will win, but I think it'll be like a 3-2 lunacy game again. I think it'll be a proper, people to know what to expect with 15 minutes to go. I don't think they'll win it comfortably.
Timo Pukki might find the net again.
He might. He's overdue one. I know Cantwell scored it the weekend. But
let's move on to the last game of the night, and it's Manchester United versus Aston Villa, who are currently beating Newcastle 2-0.
Factoring that into it, Villa might fancy themselves going to Old Trafford and cause a bit of an upset, because we've spoke about United at length. They don't seem to have any rhyme or reason to what they're doing at the minute. The club just seems to be in disrepute. Seems to be waning confidence in Ole by the day. It's prime now. Obviously, they showed that they still have some high quality footballers with what they did to Sheffield United in a 7 or 8 minute period. So they are well able at times, but they're not showing it enough.
I think they're pulling off results at home without playing well.
Yeah, that is probably the same with Villa.
But they're not getting any results away from home. This game's at Old Trafford, so you'd probably expect them to win. But like you say, they've been so poor.
Yeah.
And I've probably the last 6 podcasts I've ranted about how bad United are and how much I think Solskjaer isn't the man for the job. So I'm not going to go on one of those rants, but I'm just going to say that they'll probably win this game because they're at home. But if they were away, Villa would beat them. That's just the way United are at the moment. So I'm going to go for a United win.
I'm not far behind you there. Villa have lost more games than they should have lost this season already. They've lost 7 games and they shouldn't have. They're playing better than that. They're just a bit sloppy. That's the one thing. They play some gorgeous football at times, but they've just given away too many games. It's a tough one to call. United are obviously going to be favourites at home. They play better in front of the home crowd, but it's very unpredictable. And I think if Villa can hang into that game early, they might just nick a point. So I'm going to go for an unexpected draw here for Villa.
Oh, big call. Big call to end the podcast. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for listening. Once again, this is the Premier League Preview Podcast. You can get us on Premier_podcast on Twitter. You can get us on Facebook at the Premier League Preview Podcast, or go to our website, plpreview.com. You can send us a message there. Or send us money. You can donate it there as well. A few people sent us messages last week when we didn't do a podcast. Apologies to all of them. And hope you enjoyed this podcast. And, you know, send us a message, give us a review, and make sure you listen in next week.
And there will be a podcast next week, without doubt.
There'll be a podcast every week.
Yes.
Until there can't be. But as much as possible, there will be a podcast every week. Thanks very much for everyone for listening.
This is the Premier League Preview Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Premier_podcast. Find us on Facebook under Premier League Preview Podcast, or online at plpreview.com.